Hey friends, I'm Ashley.
Hey you guys,
I'm Lainey.
And this is Haunted Real Estate. And welcome to Haunted Real Estate.
Welcome, welcome, everybody.
How you doing, Lanae?
I'm doing just swell. How are you?
Good. So, it is Sunday for us. I've taken my nap.
I have not.
Well, that's great. That's great for everybody. So, I have two ghostly tales from Indiana. Ooh. So, welcome to the two-for-one special today.
Nice.
One of today's stories was a listener recommendation. Thank you, Sophie, for your email and suggestion for this interesting piece of property in Indianapolis, Indiana, or Indy as the locals call it. And I do have friends from Indy, so I feel like I'm allowed to call it that.
All right.
Wow. So much judgment in that one word.
All right.
All right. So, sorry, I know it took a while to get this out, but, and I'm saying sorry to you, Sophie, but we did not forget you. It just, life. That's all I have to say about that.
Life, man.
So, and then our other story comes from one of my indie pals, Kelly. So, thank you, Kelly, for sharing with me one of your favorite spooky places. So, these properties are about 2 hours apart from each other. So, let's start with an urban legend for our first story. So, this is the House of Blue Lights. It is a well-known urban legend in Indy. As the legend goes, Skiles Test, which is his name, he's our main character of this story.
What a name.
I know, Skiles.
Skiles Test.
Yeah, I kind of like it.
I like it too.
He was an eccentric millionaire who loved the color blue. So he loved the blue bug zappers around his pool. He put up blue lights around the house.
That's such a funny thing to love.
I know. Do you think he liked it for the decor or like the job that it did? Huh. But I hate the blue bug zappers. I really do.
They freak me out. I always jump at them.
And I hate the sound.
Yeah.
It's so gross. Like
a water boy.
Oh, yeah. Outside of mama's house.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he had blue lights around the house every Christmas. He just couldn't get enough of it. So that's where House of Blue Lights is very Skiles Test. So one day his wife died tragically and suddenly. He was so devastated that he decided to immortalize her in a glass coffin in the home surrounded by blue lights.
That's
which
creepy.
Also happened to be her favorite color. And he basically was able to visit her and be with her while she was in this glass coffin until Skiles Test passed away himself. So this was like the urban legend that kids passed around.
Wait, how many years between her dying and him dying?
Well, this is just the urban legend part of the story.
Okay.
So I don't, we'll discuss it. There's not an amount of years because this isn't going to be accurate. This is the legend that kids told each other.
Gotcha.
That this sad eccentric millionaire just immortalized his wife in this glass coffin surrounded by blue lights, and he would just kind of stand over her coffin at night.
Gotcha.
So kids started this, kind of created a lot of chaos, kids were like trespassing the property trying to view this glass coffin. But the story doesn't make total sense because all of Skiles Test's wives outlived him. He died first. So he did not immortalize anybody in a glass coffin.
Okay.
Not that we know of anyway. So really that was just an urban legend that kids shared. So what's the real story? So because this urban legend grew around World War II times and teenagers from all over the area would trespass onto his property like it was some kind of rite of passage just to try to catch a glimpse of Mrs. Test encased in a glass coffin. So the real story, people do believe this area is haunted today. So let's hop in our Wayback Machine and go back to when our eccentric millionaire Skiles Test was born. So Skiles Test was born in Indianapolis, Indiana on October 19th, 1889. So a long time ago.
Yeah, quite a bit.
His father, Charles Test, was the president of Indy's Chain Works, which later became the Diamond Chain Company. In 1900, Charles Test and his and several other men founded the National Motor Vehicle Company. Just so I can stay on track to the story, they basically made their family fortune between these two companies that Charles Test spearheaded, and then later Skiles Test would take over after his father passed away from Bright's disease, which is like a kidney disease. So he became heir to the fortune. By all accounts, Skiles Test was a really nice guy, whimsical and eccentric, but a good person. He was an amateur inventor as well as an architect. He purchased a farmhouse in 1913 at 6700 Fall Creek Road for him and his first wife. At this farmhouse on 86 acres, he added glass brick, a 40 by 80 swimming pool that had solar heating system, a three-story diving complex, a bathhouse with basement and elevator, a sun deck. He was pretty comfortable.
So what is glass brick? Like, is the whole house glass?
No, it's like a side of the house. Kind of like, well, I know none of you guys know, but like my bathroom has that glass, that cubed brick that you can't like really see through very well.
Yeah.
That's what that was.
Okay.
So this isn't a mansion. It's like an upgrade. He upgraded a modest house, but it was still a farmhouse. Kind of like Sarah Winchester purchased a farmhouse and then added a lot to it. This isn't quite Sarah Winchester.
Yeah.
Didn't build on that much, but similar. So Skiles Test also loved animals. And this is where he's probably his most eccentric. He had hundreds of cats on the property. And I know you're thinking, like, that's kind of gross.
Yeah.
Probably a little hoarderish. I kind of smell cat pee and kitty litter automatically.
Yeah.
I wasn't there, but by all accounts, he actually did spend a lot of money creating a comfortable home for his animals. He had as many as 250 pets at a time. Mostly cats and St. Bernards were his two kinds of pets that he kept around. So at the time of his death, he had 150 cats. He created compartments for his cats, and they would span the property and roam freely and hunt and play, and then they could go into the pool house for shelter when they wanted. They even had an employee on staff that tended to them regularly. He groomed, fed, and cleaned them. The cats were fed boiled chicken every day.
Nice.
And fresh chicken.
Yeah, so they were living the life.
They really were. So, like, don't think of it quite as, like, a hoarder house. He did care for these animals, and he just spent a lot of money making sure they had a nice home. So signs had been posted all along the road to drop their driving speed to 5 miles per hour to help prevent the cats from getting hit by cars. Test doted on his animals. He even had a pet cemetery on his property where he would bury any of the animals that died in a small casket that had carpet lining the bottom.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So they each had their own personal tombstone and their own funerals where the Lord's Prayer was recited each time a pet was buried.
Aww.
He loved his pets.
Yeah.
So
no doubt about it.
He might be eccentric and an offbeat fella, but like, he liked his animals. Mm-hmm. He seems like a good guy.
Absolutely.
I find it kind of precious. So now the story of his wife isn't true, then what makes this place haunted? Well, people, mostly teenagers, weren't exactly kind to the eccentric millionaire. It turns out that Skiles Test started encouraging the rumors at the beginning, like he kind of egged it on. But like, I probably would too if I had some legend about me, as long as it didn't like tear down my character. When I was teaching, this is just a little side note, when I was teaching, I taught at an alternative school, so the students' personalities are like a bit more exciting than a regular campus. So when a teacher would be out, kids would love to start rumors, especially if a teacher was out for like a few days. Mm-hmm. They would be like, oh, did you hear Mrs. Harrison isn't here because she shanked a guy?
Oh, and then we
would be like, yeah, you better start acting right. You know, like we would just kind of like, you know, not like promote it a little bit. Yeah, like, yeah, sure. You know, you made that up, but I'm going to go with it.
Yeah.
Because it's a funny, it's like a funny side story, whatever. Like, it's Miss Harrison's going to be back. She's not in jail because she shanked a guy. Like, you're going to find that out.
Yeah.
But like, it doesn't hurt somebody's character. So it's just kind of funny. So in Tess's case, it didn't so much hurt his character, these rumors about him, like immortalizing his wife in a glass coffin, but it did cause teenagers to want to trespass his property and see what was going on. And so it did actually cause a lot of property damage. And teenagers are sometimes pretty vicious. So unfortunately, some of these teenagers would come and they'd vandalize the property. Throughout the 50s and 60s, mostly teenage trespassers began swimming in his pool.
Oh, man.
At one point, Skiles Test, actually some kids were swimming in his pool, and he took their clothes and keys, and then, which, like, you deserve it.
Yes.
But one of the dads actually sued him.
Really?
For this. Yes.
Those little rats were on my property.
Swimming in my pool. Yeah. Like, not just even walking my property. Got undressed and swimming in my pool. So, I'm sorry you lose your shirt and keys over it. Like, that's on you.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have been there. So, another time, Skyles Tess went into his kitchen and he found some kid drinking a soda out of his fridge. Just...
wow.
So brazen. Like,
yeah.
Some people are so freaking bold. Even worse, some teenagers did release dogs from their pens, and they'd even started fires in some of the buildings on the property.
That's so mean. What did this guy do to you?
Nothing. Yeah. He's just living his life.
Yeah.
So he got to the point where the break-ins and fires concerned him so much that he would sleep in the pool house, which was made of cinder block, so it was more fire resistant. He felt like that was safer. But, like, you shouldn't have had to been, like, pushed in to your cinder block pool house. That's not fair.
Absolutely. Those kids.
But all this did lead him to have ulcers in his stomach. He was like stressed all the time. And he did ultimately pass away March 19th, 1964. And he was buried in the family cemetery, Crown Hill Cemetery. So his belongings went up for estate, and somewhere around 50,000 people showed up. Some of them, obviously, just to see the property and kind of like, oh, are the legends true kind of thing. And the property did quickly fall into disrepair after his passing. So Skyles Tess wanted his property to go to a nature preserve or Boy Scouts. So it's actually in the city's control, and as long as they maintain it according to his will, then it stays in the city's name. But the legend continues, and people claim that they can see blue lights flickering from the trees as the spirit of Skyles Tess lives on.
That's kind of cool.
So the house is no longer there, but supposedly the blue lights do flicker sometimes. And that is the legend of the House of Blue Lights, which kind of thought was kind of a sad story.
I thought it was sad too. That's really sad.
But I do love an urban legend. Like, he immortalized his wife in a glass coffin and he kind of just let that legend be there. But not cool that people are disrespectful and trespass on somebody's private property.
Not cool at all.
So this next story comes from Kelly. This one takes place in Crown Point, Indiana. So as it turns out, this town has a lot of haunted properties, so we may be revisiting Crown Point in the near future. I almost started down a rabbit hole just because it was like, oh, Crown Point, this haunted place, and that haunted place. And I was like, okay, well, I was just looking for the one thing, but that's cool.
Yeah.
So in Crown Point, there's a cemetery here that dates back to the 1800s. It's nicknamed and well known as Gypsy's Graveyard, but its real name is Southeast Grove Cemetery, if you're looking it up.
I like Gypsy's Graveyard.
Yeah, that's what most people know it by.
Okay.
So the town was first settled in the early 1800s. It was settled for its fertile soil, so it became mostly a farming community at first, like kind of everything else in the 1700s and 1800s. It was officially established as Crown Point on October 31st, Halloween 1834.
Ooh.
So the legend says that a band of gypsies were passing through Crown Point around the 1840s, and they decided to camp for a couple of weeks. They, like gypsies do, they need to make a few bucks whenever they're traveling, and they do that by selling jewelry and providing entertainment. So let's take a minute here to discuss gypsies of the time, in case you're not familiar. So first off, gypsies in general were not well received, really, in Europe, East or Western Europe, as well as the United States. Many of them originated from the Persian region, which is like Southwest Asia, so think like Middle East and India. Many ended up dispersing in Eastern Europe in about the 13th century, so that's when you get some of the European gypsies, like the Romanian gypsies, where they might be of more Asian descent, like more of Hindi culture, but then it started. Again, they went into Romania, merging with Eastern European cultures. They were definitely treated poorly, which is likely what led them to be more nomadic. Like, they just didn't have a place that they were just accepted, so they just kind of moved around a lot.
That's kind of sad.
It is really sad.
I'm kind of scared of gypsies, so.
There is a negative connotation, and I do get that. Like, there is a, what's the word I'm looking for?
I just think it dragged me to hell.
Yeah.
And I think I've been cursed by one before, but it was years ago. Nothing bad has happened to me, so.
Okay, is that worth sharing right now? Because I've never heard you say that.
No.
Okay, we'll talk about it later.
Okay.
That's crazy. That was a bomb. I do see what you're saying. Yes, Drag Me to Hell actually gave me kind of, like, freaky, too. So I do think that there is a public negative view of gypsies, but like any kind of cultural ethnicity, I, you know, like, let's not lump everybody into one, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, like I said, they were treated poorly, which likely led them to be more nomadic. In fact, in parts of Eastern Europe, they were even enslaved. Between 1939 and 1940, the Romani people were seen as racially inferior. And remember, 1939 to 1940 is World War II. So we're talking like Hitler and so... Oh,
that old Jim.
Yeah, that old Jim who saw a lot of people as racially inferior. So possibly even hundreds of thousands by the end of World War II were killed in Poland, Soviet Union, and Serbia. Many were put into concentration camps, and even they had gypsy camps where they were forced sterilization on some and others were murdered.
Gosh, that's so sad.
So they weren't really accepted in any one place. So many of the gypsies that came to the United States, in fact, almost all of them, are from Europe. So since gypsies were mostly nomadic, this meant that they had to have more like offbeat jobs. There's not going to be a steady job for them. So they made jewelry, they were entertainers, they were fortune tellers, card readers, palm readers. And this didn't really jive with the predominantly Christian areas that they were passing through during the time. So therefore, there was a lot of discrimination. Many states even started outlawing fortune telling and singling out gypsies in America. So they would basically outlaw jobs that they knew that gypsies would be the ones to have. So I lay all this groundwork here to just set the scene for what they probably would be experiencing here in Indiana. So of course, like I said, we're in the 1840s. So that predates most of the horrific acts that they would experience about 100 years later in Europe. So flashback, Crown Point, 1840s. So the people of Crown Point were no kinder to gypsies than anybody else had been. So they were blamed for anything that went wrong. If there was any kind of sound, it was, hey, those gypsies over there, they're being a nuisance. If a cow died, they were blamed, like they cursed the area. They were even blamed for stealing livestock. The people of Crown Point demanded that they leave the area. The problem was that many of the gypsies had fallen ill to what is likely influenza. So many actually began dying because the flu has always been very deadly, but especially back then. So the doctors of Crown Point, again, discriminating against gypsies, would not help them. Didn't want to help them either because they were gypsies or they were worried about getting sick themselves, so they didn't want to help. Without anywhere to bury their deceased, they would just bury them at the campsite.
So sad.
It is sad. So before they were able to leave, angry at the townspeople, the legend says that they cursed the land to whoever disturbed the dead would be cursed. So not long after this was the Civil War. Many Civil War soldiers ended up being buried in the same area, and that's where it officially became the Southeast Grove Cemetery, but known to most people as Gypsy Cemetery. So there are many strange encounters there. This one I'm going to read to you is from hauntingsaroundamerica.com. Mm-hmm. This story starts about 10 p.m. after a police officer sees this group about to enter the cemetery and tells the group, he says, "Be careful, this place is strange. We get calls all the time. There's really something wrong with this place." So this is what the story said. "As we walked through the old creaky gate, I kid you not, there was a strange fog that started to grow thick. It was really weird. In the center of the graveyard, there's an angel statue. As we got closer to her, all three of us froze." Now, real quick, I'm going to tell you this angel statue is not actually at the cemetery. There is a Jesus statue.
Okay.
But some people claim to see this angel statue, and it's believed that it's a ghost.
Interesting.
"So all three of us froze. I can't tell you why. We just stopped. I started to get this awful feeling and couldn't get out of there fast enough. We turned to some of the unit, practically ran out of there. Mind you, we hadn't seen anything, only a weird feeling. Right as we got out the gate, I turned around and froze. My friend did the same. There appeared to be a weird shape gliding through the cemetery about 20 feet away. At one point, its head snapped in our direction and then turned forward again to continue its glide. That was enough for me, and I practically drove into the backseat of my friend's car as she and our other friend hopped in. She floored it out of the area, and a few minutes later, we arrived at a restaurant and slid into our closest booth. We still had not said a word to one another, and honestly, I'm not sure how long it was before we actually spoke. All three of us were pale and clearly terrified. Finally, one of my friends broke the silence by telling each of us to whisper to him what we saw. I whispered first, then my friend, then my other friend. And then we confirmed that we each saw the same thing. Eventually, we left the restaurant to head home for the night, still basically silent. The next morning, I drove back to my friend's house, the one who drove the night before, because we were headed out to do who knows what. As we got into her car, the doors locked and the radio turned on and off. She hadn't even put the keys in the ignition yet. Ooh, scary. It did this for maybe 20 seconds, then stopped. We got out and I went home. I haven't been back to Gypsy's since that day. I'm not sure I'm ever going back. Disclaimer, if you want to visit this place, make sure you have prior permission because it is private property. So like I said, there is a Jesus statue at the cemetery, but the angel statue is not part of the cemetery. It's often reported being seen, and it's seen in different places. And it's not seen by everybody. And that's what's interesting.
Yeah.
So many people think it's a ghost that appears as a statue, which is super weird.
Mm-hmm.
Other reports seeing people seeing orbs, lots of orbs. I think the picture I'm posting on Instagram is an orb picture. There's even an orb that chases vehicles that drive by.
That would be weird. I don't know how I'd feel.
Super weird.
Like, oh, no, it's chasing me. Do you swerve off the road or do you just
not worth
keep
it.
Driving?
Yeah. One of the more occurrences and one of the creepier ones is that people find blood on their pants, usually on their legs or on their shoes.
That's weird.
So if you're in the area and want to check it out, I'd encourage you to listen to the disclaimer, get permission first. And as always, please be respectful to private property. I don't want to have to tell people that, but I need to tell people that.
You do.
So those are our two little spooky tales for today.
They were pretty cool.
I'll be revisiting Crown Point most likely. So thank you, Sophie and Kelly, for sending us those stories. If you have any kind of recommendations, make sure to email us at hauntedrepod@gmail.com or send us a direct message on Instagram at haunted.real.estate. Anything else you want to say, Lainey?
No, thank you again, as always, for listening to us and keeping up with us. I know we're... What are you showing me?
I'm showing you the orb pictures at the graveyard. Isn't that a lot of orbs?
That is a ton of orbs. That's a whole Gypsy family.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you for staying with us while we've sporadically released episodes. We appreciate you.
Yes, thank you so much. We will be back in this general area. I told Lainey I was going to do it today, but I really wanted to finish House of Blue Lights in Indiana. But I really want to do some Skinwalker stuff because that's really, it's been lingering in my mind since we did the Appalachian area. Yeah. So I'm going to be revisiting that.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I like Skinwalkers.
I want like really spooky, spooky, spooky.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling fall vibes. Fall is 48 days away. So I'm
Dang.
Ready. I know. I'm ready.
This year's just flying by.
It seriously is flying by. So anyway, thank you. We love you guys and we will see you soon. Bye.
Bye.